Before we begin today's daf, we should do a brief review of the various inyanim that we've been talking about until now, because we have finished the part of the perek that deals with bedika and bitul, and we got right up to the beginning of the next issue, which is biur. So you'll notice that the first part of the perek was a completely, seemed to be a non sequitur in a sense to the main point, because what we examined over there was the nature of language and how language relates to information density, what amount of exposure is considered to be correct, whether it's in terms of saying over bad news or it's in terms of a lashon that is not tsanua and so on and so forth, what the Torah is ma'adif in terms of the use of language, particularly in terms of or. That involved us in all types of things. Olam hazeh, olam haba, the nature of or and chayshech, the idea of how the universe utilizes information, black holes, stars, all kinds of weird stuff. And we noted that, of course, Pesach itself is deeply, deeply connected to language. And apparently, when we get deeper into understanding it, we will be able to have a better understanding of why information density itself relates to the concept of freedom and our own development. The next thing we went through, so that took us all the way to Daf Dalet. The next thing that we went through was the responsibility and the believability of people. So that had to do with rentals, who is responsible and who is believed. And can we assume that something was done when it was your job to do it? And that got us into even the issue of Psulei Edus, whether we could believe Noshim, Kitanim, Avodim, and so on. Then we went into, that brought us up to Daf Hei. Then we went into a long and complex investigation of what's the source of all of these isurim. And we went through the differences between the psukim of Ba'al Yirah, Ba'al Yimatzeh, how it was we were supposed to understand B'yom HaRishon, which at the end we realized that there were really three separate elements in creating the space of Chometz, which included the act of Hashbasa, and then the description of what that Hashbasa is meant to achieve, such that we actually thought that it might be Mechayev three separate acts of Bedika, which was amazing. We didn't stick with that, but at least it showed us the interrelationship of our initial take on all of this. And that was the way in which we are needing to recognize that Bayera'eh, Bayematzeh, and Uviyom HaRishon, and Ach Biyom HaRishon are all interrelated in understanding what the source of the Yisr is, and therefore what we need to do about it. That brought us into all types of understandings of what is the interrelationship between Bitul and Bedika anyway, because Bedika obviously ends up with the idea of Biur. The biggest riot to that, of course, is the bracha that we're going to be making, which we discussed on Daf Zayin. If the bracha is Biur Chometz, that means that essentially we've got two different issues. Something that deals directly with the way in which we perceive, and that perception is related to the way the Torah insists that we inhabit a different space, which relates to the idea of bitul, which relates to the idea of or, which relates to the idea of information. So all of those issues are very much part of even the way the initial uptake of the Masechet was, gently depositing us into this idea of like what we're supposed to do with our minds and how it is that that relates to what we're doing in terms of physically getting rid of things. So this really began the march towards Biur, because we already had to deal with the nature of brachas, which of course brought us into language again. How clear does the language have to be? So we investigated the bracha of Mila and Lulav and Sukkah and Tvila and Shchita and Shofar and so on, in order for us to understand where we had some leeway in the language and why, strangely enough, it's better to use for brachas leeway than greater accuracy, which is fascinating. Again, a very interesting interrelationship to how we utilize information and language. And then we spoke about the way in which we're supposed to get rid of the chametz using the Or HaNer, and where is it necessary to do it, which brought us into the question of dangerous situations, and that took us into Shluchei Mitzvah and Nizokin and to the next sugya. So the next sugya was started with the idea of the chulda, and that sugya was all about where the bedika was already done, and the question is what could occur that would force us to redo the bedika. And that led into all types of interesting interrelationships between the dinim of chametz and all of the various svekas, rubais, taliyais, and so on, all through Shas, which somehow the Gemara assumes we need to be able to translate into specific ways of dealing with the ideas of chametz and these svekas, because after all, that's really what bedika is about. In other words, the bedika is to make sure that you are not making assumptions about things, but rather you're doing something about it. And therefore, the question of assumptions and chazakas is very deeply connected to all of that. Then we got into, finally, yesterday, we got into the question of where we would make a gezeira. So are there cases where, and the reason we got into that was because of the relationship of, okay, what are the chances that you're going to actually come to eat the chametz? Now, coming to eat the chametz, that was, according to Tosfos, that was the reason that we needed to do the bedik in the first place. But the bottom line is, it's certainly something that we need to consider, because if we are going to institute an idea of bedika, so then it's certainly going to take into consideration the fact that the chiyuv of getting a new space certainly is not going to be served very well if in doing that you end up actually eating chametz, which was the main issue. And that brought us into, where do we make gezeiras about things that may lead to an issur d'oraisa and where we don't? And we ended up yesterday recognizing a number of different factors that need to be taken into consideration. Rabbi Yehuda's focus on bodo mineh, and then various particular factors, the most general of which was whether it's michlaf or not michlaf, which in the end we understood Rabbi Yehuda also recognizes is a universal issue of how likely it is to get confused. And then we had other things. We had the idea of, can you assure that you won't make a mistake by doing things with a shinui? Do we need to worry about the fact that even where you are bodil, you may end up messing up because you're bohul? Are there other things that might affect the way, in the particular case, such as the very fact that I am involved in something that is the greatest simon to me, that I'm not going to end up eating it if I'm trying to destroy it? And so on, very, very different takes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachomim about the psychology of these gezeiros. That brought us up to the sugya that we started about Bior, and it's from there that we continue today. And the question over there was, why exactly do we have these gezeiras that force us to get rid of our chametz earlier than we otherwise would have? So that was the next step. When do we burn the chametz? And burning the chametz had to do with the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about how mixed up could we possibly get. Now, we initially took the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which had to do with how confused could witnesses get. And we used that because we found there also the Machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And we used that sort of as a template to understand the Machlokas over here, in that Rabbi Yehuda seems to say, well, we're worried you're going to mix up 2 hours. And we thought that this is what was going on in the Mishnah of Sanhedrin as well. And because of that, we had two different ways of understanding. One way of understanding was the way that Abaye understood the Machlokas in Sanhedrin, which was like this. Both people are making a mistake, but it's an honest mistake. So what we can do is we can take the event, put it smack bang in the middle. That's how Abaye understands it. If the event occurred, let's say, at 3:30, so then if 1:8 says at 3 and 1:8 says at 4, so then essentially what we're looking at over here is the same testimony, because one of them is referring to the beginning and one is referring to the end. And because of that, it's very possible that there's no hakasha whatsoever. And all we need to worry about, therefore, is the question of how much of an error is logical. So according to Rabbi Meir, the Maisa could have been at exactly the same hour, and they're referring it to different ways, which is now, remember, we haven't dealt yet with the question of why we would make such an assumption, but if we're giving a spread of an hour, the spread of an hour could mean that when the guy says 2 o'clock, he really means the very last moment of the second hour. That's where they refer to time. And the guy that said three meant the very first moment of the next hour. So there was no mistake. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, both of them make a mistake. But they make a very small mistake. So even though they sound like they're very, very different, 2 hours apart, really they're not. Because the event occurred in the middle, and each one was Torah a half an hour in either direction. So that means that something at 3:30 could be called two, meaning the end of the second hour, or five, meaning the very beginning of the next hour. So it would be basically a very small kind of mistake of a half an hour and so on. The next pshat of Abaya said, no, we do not assume that both of these witnesses made a mistake. One of the witnesses made a mistake. So then what's the maximum mistake? So then we could go according to Rabbi Meir and say that there's really no mistake because it's just a reference to of like less than a minute of what you would call the end of the second hour, beginning of the third hour. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, all you need to do is say that it's a mistake of an hour with a little bit more, because I don't want to say it was in the middle and both made a mistake. So those were there were two issues, therefore. In the second pshat of Abaya, issue number one, it's preferable to say only one made a mistake and not to be toila it in both of them making a mistake. That accounts for the change in Rabbi Yehuda. And the other thing that Abaya changes in the second approach of Abaya is that he does not believe that we would refer to exactly the same moment in two ways. There would be maybe a minute between them. So the person that's saying it's 2 o'clock, meaning the end of the second hour, he's a little bit off, or the guy that's at the beginning of the third hour is a little bit off, maybe less than a minute, but I don't want to call exactly the same moment by two different names. Those are the differences. Both of those pshatim, says Rava today, makes no sense. And that brings us to Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, which is today's daf. Okay, so today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Yud Beis, and we're holding at the top line, Ozer Rav Huna Brei Rav Yehuda. So Rav Huna Brei Rav Yehuda heard what Abaya had to say, and he went and he said it over to Rava. And Rava said, this is the craziest thing I ever heard. The Torah says that you need testimony. The Torah says that you need to investigate that testimony. As a matter of fact, we have seven indications in the Pesukim, seven different words, v'darashta, v'chakart, heitev, and this is repeated and so on. And you're telling me that we should, besides the fact that the Torah told me, v'hitzilu ha'eda, which means that the testimony has to be investigated in such a way that the Sanhedrin is interested in messing up the witnesses. Do your best to try to save the defendant. Don't make any assumptions. And you, Abaya, are telling me that I'm supposed to say, well, why should I assume that there's a contradiction? After all, they might both be saying the same thing. They might. And on that basis, we're going to kill the guy. You know, first let's kill him, then let's ask questions. That's Mexico, man. That's not Sanhedrin. So forget it. Okay, throw out this pshat. If we would have put them up against the wall and forced them to say, okay, what are you talking about? You're talking about the end of the hour. You're talking about the beginning of the hour. Let's get this straight. And we would have found out that the guy who said three, he meant the beginning of the third. And the guy who said five meant the end of the fifth. And then we would have thrown out the testimony. But no, I mean, why should we trouble the witnesses to tell us exactly what they meant? After all, we can easily assume that we could just get rid of another guy and deal with our overpopulation problem. I mean, what the heck is Abaya talking about? We're supposed to kill this guy because maybe. When the Torah tells us, you're supposed to save the defendant. Therefore, this is completely off the wall. The way to analyze the differences between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is maximum tos, not the minimum. What is the maximum difference between them? And that would be what we're considering to be an honest mistake. So in other words, if one of them would say two and the other one would say three, then we'd have to say that means that we need to assume the worst. The guy that said two meant the beginning of two. The one that said three meant the end of three. There's a two-hour spread. And nonetheless, we're saying that we can accept that. That obviously means that people can make a mistake of 2 hours, not of 0 hours, Rabbi Yehuda. It's exactly the opposite. Therefore, here's how to say it. Elam Arava, it's exactly the difference. According to Rabbi Meir, an Adam is Toed not 0, but 2 hours, which would mean that even when we identify this as a mistake, sir, what did you mean when you said 2? I meant the very first moment of 2. And what did you mean when you said 3? I meant the very last minute of 3. And there's a 2-hour difference. Nonetheless, Rabbi Meir is ready to accept that. Why? Because he considers that to be an honest mistake and that most people really do not know the difference. I mean, remember, they're not walking around with Fitbits, you know. So they're looking up at the sky and getting a general idea of what time it is, okay? So because of that, we have to assume that there's no way to be makrish them on that basis. It isn't a hakasha. It's within the range of error. So therefore, he must hold the range of error is actually 2 hours minus a little bit, because obviously one is going to start at the beginning and one is going to end at the end. So, okay, 2 hours minus 2 minutes, let's say, right? And Ladivre Rabbi Yehuda, it would have to be 3 hours, because he might be saying, the other guy saying, I meant all the way to the end of the 5th hour is what I meant. And the other guy saying, I meant the beginning of the 2nd hour. Okay, then there's a 3-hour spread, according to him, with a few minutes minus, all right? That's what I think we have to say. Therefore, let me explain it to you, okay? Rabbi Meir is saying a person makes a mistake of 2 hours minus a couple of minutes. So now, that would mean that the event took place. I don't know when the event took place. The event took place at the beginning of the 2nd hour. Or the event took place at the end of the 3rd hour. One of them is making a mistake of 2 hours, and nonetheless, Rabbi Meir is accepting it. That's the worst possible scenario. And that must mean that Rabbi Meir considers the worst possible scenario to be acceptable error. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, I would say that Adam Toesh Shalosh Sha'ot Chaser Mashu, we'd have to assume that, we'd have to assume the worst, that the event took place either at the very beginning of 3 or the very end of 5. One of them is off by close to 3 hours. That's the point. And nonetheless, that's considered to be a valid range, margin of error that does not allow us to throw out the testimony. Now, let's take a look at the whole basis of this idea. Why do we need, what difference does it make? I mean, A murdered B in front of us. What do you care what the exact hour was? Why is this so important? So we're missing a crucial issue over here. And that's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that explains. And as we learn out of a pasuk, that there are 7 essential pieces of data that you need to be able to get out of those witnesses. Now, until you understand what's going on, it sounds extremely childish. But you'll see exactly what's going on here, and it's brilliant. The Torah, by repeating the concept of the drisha, the chakira, the deep investigation of the hetev, 7 times, teaches us that you've got to be able to ask 7 questions. Now, those 7 questions end up, they're not really 7 questions. They're 7 steps of zeroing in. That's what the Torah is teaching you. So how zeroed in do you have to be? Now, let me explain to you what the problem is. The reason that I need any level of zeroing in is because of the fact that the Torah puts together all of these dinim of Eidos with, after the Darashta v'chakarta, that if it turns out that the Eidim are Eidim Zaymamim, then Ve'asitam lo kasher zama. Now, as you recall from Masechet Makot, the meaning of Eidim Zaymamim has nothing in common with the meaning of Eidos Mukheshet. Eidos Mukheshet means they contradict each other. What if they contradict each other on something that's totally meaningless? That we'll talk about. Was the guy wearing sneakers or was he wearing leather shoes when he committed the murder? Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. That's mukheshes. What we're talking about over here is the possibility of hazama. And that's because since all of the Eidos is linked to the parsha of hazama, the Torah is teaching us that unless those witnesses are in a position whereby if it turns out that somebody else will tell us, and there's a minimum of 2 people, that the supposed witnesses were not even in that location at that time, then we will do to the witnesses what it is that they wanted to do to the other person. That's a completely new concept. I have no idea whether they're telling the truth or not. Maybe they are telling the truth. Maybe they witnessed it over the guy's telephone, but they know that that won't be usable for ADIS, and because of that, they lied and said they were there. I don't care if they're telling the truth. What I care about is that they weren't in the place that they said they were at that time. Now, what does at that time mean? That's the question. So if the person says, I saw so-and-so murder, I saw A murder B. So we ask him, okay, when did that happen? Gee, I don't remember. Well, if you don't remember, how are we supposed to be mazim you? So tell us, did it happen before Pesach or after Pesach? After Pesach. Okay, it's been 3 months since Pesach. So now if we get two people that will say, these guys were with us for the past 3 months in Tahiti, and they're claiming to have witnessed something within those 3 months in Yerushalayim. They never went to Yerushalayim. Okay, so then they're Eidos that could be Mazumim, right? I mean, what are the chances you're going to find somebody who's with them for 3 months and can testify to the fact that that entire time? But it's possible. So how do I know what the Torah means when it says Eidot she'ata yachol lahazimem? How zeroed in must you be? So brilliantly, what the pasuk does is it mentions seven different words that indicate more and more zeroing in, which means that let's say you take the maximum. Okay, it's crazy. The guy says, okay, but tell me something. Was it during this Shemitah or last Shemitah? Over the past 7 years, or might it have been 14 years ago or 20 years ago? Okay, fine. Do you really mean that somebody's going to be with them for seven? No, I don't. But that's the first stage. Question number two. Okay, what does the question number two have to do? Ah, that must be which year within that Shemitah, because that is the next thing they could identify. Then we could go to which month. Then we could go to which day. Then we could go to which hour. You see, so as we zero in, we now know more and more of what the Torah defines as a reasonable risk of hazama to those Eidos. That's the point. So then these are childish questions. Okay, so what Shemitah was it? Oh, come on, guys. That's the idea, right? Okay, so therefore we're going to say, look, you've got to be able to tell me what week it was, what year it was, what month it was, what day of the month it was, what day is it in the week, so that we can examine that relationship to the month, what hour was it, and obviously where was it. Putting all of that together, we now know that we've zeroed it into the hour. So the question over here is, okay, but what is the meaning of that hour? That's the machlokas over here in terms of acceptable error. Okay, so now it says over there, the Mishnah, Tanan, ma ben chakirot lebedikot. And we also, those are the sheva chakirot. The bedikot are whatever we feel like. In other words, if the court is out to mess these edim up, so then we ask them all types of tricky questions. Now, so, okay, so tell me, what kind of shoes was he wearing? Do you remember whether he had shaved that day or not? And so on and so forth, right? Now, the witnesses obviously are not responsible for every possible thing. So Alon will remember that the only thing that got PK to be accepted as an aide was his ability to answer what color was the sleeve of the major, who, and so on and so forth, right? So those were bedikos, and the more you can answer those bedikos, the more likely you are to contradict the other witness who's not in there with you. There you go. To contradict the other witness who didn't hear your answer. And so you can trip him up. So that's another way to get your information clarity and to be vitzilua eda. But if the witness says, I don't know, I'm supposed to know, I didn't notice that. You can't say, well, then we don't accept your testimony because you're an idiot. But if he says, I don't know about any of the steps of zeroing in, that actually will make it impossible for us to be Mekayim the Din of Azama the way the Torah wanted to. So there, if he says, I don't know, we throw him out of court because he's not a kosher witness because we cannot be Mazim. That's the difference. So Ma'ben Chakirot B'dikot. The Chakirot, if one of them says, gee, I don't know, so then we throw him out. Edutan B'tela. But the B'dikot, even both of them say, I don't know, so then there's no problem. So we asked over there, can you explain the logic of this to us? All of this is from Sanhedrin. What's the difference between Chakirot and Bedikot that we treat them so differently? And we said it's very simple. That when the Chakirot, if somebody says, Eni yodei edusa betela, why? Because it becomes an edut she'iata yochola hazima, and therefore violates the definition of testimony that the Torah is given. Mashenkin, the bidikot, as long as I could still be mazim them, there's no reason for me to cancel the testimony. All right, now you understand? So here's my problem, says the Gemara. If you're going to tell me that people have that kind of spread, so then Ezer Shah is also Edush Yata Yechol Azima, right? Because, I mean, the guy will say, what do you mean? You say at 3 o'clock you witnessed this murder? Why, at 3 o'clock you were with me in a different city? So the guy will answer, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, 3 o'clock might mean 5 o'clock, according to Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, it might mean 6 o'clock. I don't know. So then we won't be able to be mazim him either, right? So it's the same thing, because he'll say, okay, so we made a mistake. Okay, it's an honest mistake. You can't call me an aid. So then we won't be able to be mazim him. And of course, the answer is, it's the spread that counts. The spread is what we need to do. So if we're going to be mazim him, then Enoch Inami, there's a major difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Meir, he'd have to be able to say, you were with me during the entire spread of the possible time that you claimed. And he'd have to say this to both witnesses, which would mean he'd have to keep the spread from the lowest to the highest. So that means I was with you for 4 hours or for 6 hours, right? That way he would be, I would say, both of them, because you need to be able to be mazim both of them, which means that we're accepting that kind of spread here. And that's the point. So we give them kulo to utayu, which means, according to Rabbi Meir, we will give them from the beginning of the first moment of the day, which is b'tchilat sha'a rishona, all the way through to the end of the fifth, between the two witnesses. And the truth is, we should have gone back even further, because according to Rabbi Meir, the beginning of the mistake is in the middle of the night still. It's not just 1 hour before. But we can't do that because nobody makes a mistake between daylight and the middle of the night. So, okay, that we would say that's not a valid error. So, but if I say to you, look, I was with you from the break of dawn until 5 hours in the day, at the end of 5 hours, and so now you've handled both of those witnesses, and therefore both of them are considered to be edus, that is not mukheshet, it's edus, that is huzam, by the same cut of witnesses that are mazim then. So, b'dinu d'nesu l'mikor, t'vei ala b'ni yamama v'layla yoloto, Inish people don't make mistakes between daylight and night. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to have to give them all the way from the beginning of the first hour, all the way through to the end of the sixth hour, because we need to say that the maximum error might have happened in that one was mistaken back, and he called the first the third, and the other one called the sixth the third. So you'd have to go all the way from the beginning to the end in order to cover the full time, which is really 6 hours, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Multiply your error margin of 3. And the truth is, we should actually have been giving him more before and after, because we should have included also the seventh hour. So we should have been giving you mikor tvei, but we don't do that because bein yamama l'layla yoloto inchi. And we should have been giving you the seventh hour also because of the spread of 6 hours, but we don't do that either, because nobody would be making the mistake of saying 5, meaning 7, because at the fifth hour, the sun is in the east, and at the seventh hour, the sun is in the west. And therefore, that's too obvious. So that's not a actual acceptable taina that he said, no, I made a mistake. It was really, you know, I called it in the afternoon. I mean, I called it the morning, but it was really the afternoon. You don't mix up morning and afternoon. Okay, so now, let's take a look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir says, Ochlin kol chomesh sofi b'tchila shesh. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Once it gets to the fifth hour, forget it. You can't eat anymore. Ochlin kol arba, tolin kol chomesh, sarfin b'tchilat shesh. So now, let's understand the implications of the machlokas in Sanhedrin and how it applies to the Mishnah over here, because it does not seem to add up perfectly. Look, according to Abaye, he says, Alibet Rabbi Meir, that ein adam to'e velo klum, right? So if people don't make mistakes at all, so then I don't understand. Why can't he eat all the way until the sixth hour? And if he doesn't make a mistake, he's never going to come to do any kind of achil in the seventh hour when it's usher. So what do we have to worry about? So why did he say you need an extra hour? How does Abai explain our Mishnah? And even according to his second approach, where he said, well, you can make a mistake a little bit. Fine. So give him a little bit. That's according to Rabbi Meir. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, all that Abai understood was the maximum a guy would make a mistake of a half an hour. Okay, so if you make a mistake of half an hour, let him eat till the middle of the day, about a half an hour before he should stop. And according to the Lashon, the second Lashon, that a person is to you an hour plus, fine. So give him until the end of the fifth hour. But fourth hour? Why in the world limit it to the fourth hour, according to Rabbi Yehuda? I don't understand. So how do you understand the machlokas in this Mishnah when you compare it to the machlokas in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin? Omar Abaye, look, you can't make a comparison because when you're talking about Edus, a guy is ready to walk into court and testify to a capital case. He knows perfectly well that he's going to be torn to shreds by the attorney, right? So he is going to do his darnest to get clear what time it was, and he's going to be paying close attention. Okay, there is where I said, if the guy is trying, then the maximum spread, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a half an hour. Now, when you're talking about chametz for dummies, which is basically what's going on Erev Pesach, dummies don't have that type of diuk, and that is given over lakol. And if it's given over lakol, I mean, come on, they can make any kind of mistake. So edut mesura lezrizim, and chametz is lakol masur. Now let's take a look according to Rava. Okay, how does Rava square our Mishnah with the Mishnah in Sanhedrin? According to Rava, who says that like Rabbi Meir, a person can make a little bit less than a two-hour mistake. So then if that's the case, why does Rabbi Meir allow you to eat all, even during the fifth hour? He should say from the beginning of the fifth hour, you can't eat. That's something else. That's because you cannot possibly confuse the fifth hour and the seventh hour, because Rabbi Meir says, look, at the fifth hour, the sun is in the east. In the seventh hour, the sun is in the west. What am I going to be goes there? You could make a mistake if you're wearing a watch. We're not talking about that kind of mistake here. We're talking about looking up at the sky and saying, oh my gosh, it's too late to eat chametz. So why would I worry a two-hour mistake in that case? It can't possibly happen somebody's going to make that kind of error. And therefore, I'm not concerned with that. So I don't understand. If you're not concerned with that, you could say that even in the sixth hour, I mean, it's the same thing. The difference between the sun being in the east and the west, I mean, you could also be seen between the sixth hour and the seventh hour, right? Says Rav Adar Bar Rava, no, not right. Because during that entire hour, you have the sun basically, now, what we would say in English is directly overhead. The Gemara does not use the words directly overhead because the sun is not directly overhead in the northern hemisphere. But what we do say is that the sun is right at the juncture of the angles that would be created by the south. Remember, the sun is to the south, but it's also at the furthermost south that it could be while being in between east and west. So therefore, we call it Bikarnata. It's right at the top of that angle. And since I cannot measure it precisely, so it can look to me as if it's at the correct angle during any time during that hour. So because of that, it's not true. I could confuse it. So therefore, Rabbi Meir is ready to say, if it's obvious that it's in a different place, fine. If it's not, then I hold you have to make a gezerah. And Rava, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds Anam Torah Shalosh Sha'ot Choser Mashu, so how come Rabbi Yehuda doesn't say that it should be also from the beginning of the fourth hour? How come he says only from the beginning of fifth hour? That's 2 hours. I thought the mistake is 3 hours. No, that's because that the idea over there is, again, it's too obvious. You yourself already said that in 5, the chama is b'mizrach. In 7, the chama is b'marv kol shekein. And the fourth hour, oh, wait a minute, that's true. So then, if you're relying on that, then why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda allow you to eat through the entire fifth hour? I don't get it. If you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is going to rely on the way that I could see the angle of the sun, And that it has nothing to do with his Sanhedrin idea of my needing to worry about his maximum spread of 3 hours. So then let him agree with Remy Mayer. Why doesn't he say that you could eat also the entire fifth hour? And then only when you're going to get into problem of identifying where the sun is. So how do you explain that? So then he should agree as well. Because kol shekein arba, siyachi b'chamesh laminecha, tirgama abaye aliba derava, edut misura lezrizim, and chometz l'kol masur. Enochinami, Rava is right when it comes to the question of the idea in Sanhedrin. Fine, so enochinami, when it comes to edus, Rabbi Yehuda is made that we don't have that kind of mistake between chometz and sheva, agreed. The problem is that when it comes over here to chometz, we're talking about anybody. And so anybody could make even that kind of dumb mistake by not being medayek. But to make that level of a mistake that you're talking about the end of the third hour and somebody's going to think, oh my gosh, it's the seventh hour. And he's going to say, oh my gosh, I still got 3 hours left because it's the morning. I mean, that even an idiot wouldn't make that kind of mistake. So that's the difference. So I'd say it's the same thing that I said before. Rava, so this is one approach. Rava says, no. I don't believe that it's too coincidental that everybody just fits in exactly how much they're worried about the person making the mistake. And then there's a whole different issue about whether the same dummy is going to make the mistake with the issue of where the sun is. I mean, come on. You're saying there's no relationship at all between what's going on in Sanhedrin and what's going on here. I don't know. I don't buy it. I mean, you're putting in too many different issues. Who we're talking about, where the sun is, what amount of the angle of the sun, and that just happens to tie in to what the difference is in terms of other hours where it wouldn't have to do with the sun, and that has to do with the hakosham. I mean, that could be in the middle of the night. I mean, no. This is another issue over here. The issue is, says Rav, a completely different point. And that is, that since Lav Hainu time of Rabbi Yehuda, this is not the mistaking that we're talking about. This is Rabbi Yehuda who says you need an extra hour to do your Sreifas Chametz. You know why? Because this is Rabbi Yehuda going L'shitato. Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Biur Chametz Ela Sreifa. He learns out later on from the relationship of Chametz to Notar. And he says, you see, that it's considered to be Be'eshi Sareif. That is going to apply to Chametz as well. If the only way to get rid of your chametz properly, the way the Torah wants you, is to burn it, so then you need time. I mean, if you could just throw your chametz down the toilet or into a river or whatever, I understand. Okay, comes the exact moment, which is Rabbi Meir. All right, time's up, throw it out. Fine, so I throw it out. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, uh-oh, it's time to burn my chametz. Oh my gosh, did you bring matches? No. You got any kind of kerosene? No. Okay, so by the time he gets everything together, he's already going to be in the seventh hour and he hasn't burned his chometz. Therefore, we need an extra hour. So since he says, Ein bir chometz ala sreifa, yavile rabbanan sha'achat l'kot ba beitzim, in order that he should have more. Esve ravina l'rava, this, it doesn't work out, because Rabbi Yehuda says, Eimata shalo b'sha'at b'yuro, avo b'sha'at b'yuro, hashbatato b'chol davar. It isn't true. Because the only time that we say, when do I say that the only way you can get rid of your chametz is by burning it? That's dafka when you're doing it during the time when midiraisa, it's still mutter. And it's not yet time to actually have to burn it midiraisa. But the moment that you do have to burn, because you're now mechuyev in not eating that chametz, and now is the time of the ach of the Yom HaRishon, so then the Torah doesn't say, okay, wait until you get a chance to burn it with a flame. Throw it out. Get rid of it immediately. So then why in the world would we just wait and burn it at the beginning of the seventh hour? Tosfos does not like that at all for obvious reasons. I mean, what do you mean wait till the beginning of the seventh hour? You're supposed to have been taking care of it before. And if anything, I mean, if we're going to be learning it out of Noser, then we have to learn it out from Noser at the time that you are Mekhliyev to burn it, not Noser when you're not Mekhliyev to burn it. What kind of crazy thing is this? Therefore, Tosfos says exactly the opposite of the way Rashi is learning it. Now, the point over here is that the idea of a shad biuro means at sheish. So because since it isn't usur yet, it's the exact opposite of Rashi. Since it isn't usur yet, and the chiyuv to burn it now is only to Rabbanan, so over there, I can get rid of it any way that I want. It's only once that it becomes usur, then it becomes like, no, sir, then I'm a chiyuv to burn it. And therefore, the kasha is, if you're going to be doing the mitzvah to Rabbanan, why did the Rabbanan have to be giving you an extra hour to burn it if you don't need to burn it? That's the point in the Gemara. Okay, but in any event, we better figure out another answer. Elam Arava. Okay, then I'll tell you. Rabbi Yehuda's worried about an overcast day where you may not be able to tell the difference between the third and fifth hour, the fourth and the fifth or the seventh hour, sorry. So if that's the case, as the Gemariochi, afilu ba'arbashot namilonechos, if it's a completely overcast day, you don't know the difference. So then we're back to the question. So then we're worried about the mistakes that you make in time. So then given the full 3 hours, no? Nah, but there's another thing. The other thing is that you know when it's time to eat. Omer of Papa, arba zman su'udat lakoli. The fourth hour is the normal time for people biologically to feel hungry. So even if they put off breakfast because they're on some kind of diet, they still start feeling hungry at that point. And everybody knows biologically from an internal clock what time of the day it is when he has enough hints. So it doesn't matter how overcast the day is. You don't feel, oh, well, gee, it's really probably before dawn, so I shouldn't be hungry. You don't make that mistake, unfortunately. So because of that, people are not going to make that kind of error. And Tana Rabbana, once we're talking about when is the normal time to eat, well, the break of dawn, the first hour, if you're a cannibal, that's the best time to eat. Machal ludim. Rashi says ludim are cannibals. Answer. Shnia, the second hour is Machal Listin. They don't like getting up early. They've been busy all night burglarizing the various homes in town. Shlishi, the third hour, is Machal Yorshim. That's people who don't have any work, you know. So I'm certainly not going to get up early to eat, but I mean, once I get up, I got nothing else to do. The fourth hour is Machal Poalim. These guys are busy getting to work and so on and so forth. You take a little break. Fourth hour, eat something. Chamishit is Machal Tabidei Chachamim. And the sixth is the Machal Kol Adam. Wait, didn't you just say Omer of Papa Rivi Eats Mansudal? Yeah. This is, sorry. Let's redo this. Ela Epoch. Rivi Eat is Machal Kol Adam. Chamishit is Machal Polim. Now that sounds more like it. Shishit is Machal Tamid Chachomim. If you eat anything beyond that, it's like Zorek Evan Lechemad. You know, you want to have, you've got a wine bag that you're skein that you're carrying around and you want to fill it up. You could pour a bunch of rocks into it, and now it feels like it's got a lot of wine in it. Believe me, you ain't got more than you had before. So you're putting stuff into your stomach. You're not getting anything out of it. So there's no point in eating after that. But when is this? This is only if you didn't start the day off with a little bit of food. If you had a light breakfast or a cup of coffee or something, then there's no problem. Omer of Ashi, you should know that the machlokas in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin is the source of the machlokas about chometz. Obviously, what the heck have we been talking about for the whole hour? What's we been saying? Come on, you're coming all of a sudden to tell us that we should have this daf in the Gemara? Yeah, because of Kamashban. Listen, I mean, you must admit, our trying to square the two Mishnayos was a little bit iffy, wasn't it? I mean, we're finding this answer and that answer, and, you know, well, it's different. Maybe it's Yom HaMa'unan, or it's different because Zrizim are made, but everybody's chometz is for dummies. I mean, you know, maybe there actually are two different approaches to the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, which often happens, Lo Nechlegu Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, B'davarzeh, and so on, right? So he's coming to tell me that all of these weird answers, Shinuya D'Shanina, are correct. V'lo Tema, don't take the easy way out and say, apparently there's no relationship. These are two separate Tanoim. Omer of Shimi Barashi, by the way, the entire discussion over here is only as regards what the time is on the clock. But if somebody relates the Eidus to an astronomical phenomena, one guy says, oh, the murder took place before the Netzachama. And the other one says it took place after the Netzachama. So then, of course, the Eidus is Betela, because if you're talking about an event is an event. Well, obviously, no. I mean, pshita, what are we, stupid? No, what I meant to say was like this. If one of them said it was before the Neitz HaChama, and one of them said it was during the Neitz itself, it isn't Batela. So, okay, fine. What's the difference? You're talking about an event. They're talking about different events. Onami pshita. So what are you teaching me? No, because you see, since you said we give margins of errors, so Mao de Tema, I might have thought that we couldn't give a margin of error over here also. Both of them are referring to the same event, the same exact time. And the guy that said, Vahodika Omar Bitocha Neitz, he was really Begiluye Avikoi. He was in a spot where there was a lot of reflected light that was coming from the Neitz, and he thought it was like, whoa, what a beautiful sunrise. Whereas in reality, the sunrise per se was already over. Okay, fine. That's not such a big error. Kamash Malan, we don't provide margins of errors on physical phenomena. We provide margins of errors on something which anyway is an abstraction that you have to work out what hour of the day. For that, brains are not as good as direct perceptions.